Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic. Yes, you're asking yourself, why do they keep doing it? I don't know either, but we still are doing it. I'm your host, as always, the man with the most, the producer of the world's greatest Comic-Con every August at the Mohegan Sun. It's called Terrific Con. Buy your tickets today. If you want to go to a real Comic-Con, that's the one to go to. Now, speaking of things that are real, it doesn't get much more real than the one and only, the man from the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, where he will sell you whatever childhood memory you thought you lost and can never find again every single week. Mr. John Cimino. Hello, John.
Hey, Mickey.
How are you, Johnny? How you doing?
Doing good. And let's point out, tickets are also on sale at Saturday Morning Collectibles at my booth there. Pick them up every Sunday.
That's right. I forgot. Thank you very much for reminding me that you don't have to drive all the way to the Mohegan Sun or pay those outrageous Ticketmaster fees. You could buy them at the Raynham Flea Market while you're buying some other goodies from our good friend Johnny.
Yeah, and you save about 75 cents on each ticket when you buy them.
And also you don't have to pay those Ticketmaster fees, which is also good, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
The man doesn't need our extra money. We could use
and
that.
And I'm going to be doing this on 2 weeks prior to Terrific Con, Mitch. I'm going to do a raffle where somebody can win Friday, Saturday, and Sunday tickets.
Oh, look at you.
One big thing, and like, you know, they'll put into a little kitty, maybe $20. They'll get a bunch of people. If their number comes up, they win the tickets.
Well, look at you being entrepreneurial and all that shit.
Yeah, it'll be kind of fun. See what you can get. You know, everything's get a weekend, fun. Like a weekend, little weekend thing.
Yeah. Now, Johnny, we all know people that have been listening to the show have been wondering how I've been doing. I'm doing the 21 days straight now, consecutive, been on that exercise bike in the morning, 45 minutes at least, walking the dog for a couple miles every day, 21 days straight. So I've dropped about 12 pounds. It's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, and you've been eating better, right?
I have been eating no more soda. No more of the snacks, you know. Though it's tempting late at night, that's when I usually go crazy and start eating. But now I've chosen to eat celery and carrots if I'm going to start snacking at 9 and 10 o'clock. How about that?
You change it up. The biggest thing was, like, when you change water, when you get water, you kill so many calories because all that diet stuff, it's all processed sugar, and sugar is the worst thing for the body.
Yes, it is. It is.
And even in milk. It's even in milk. Juice.
All right. Now, listen here. We got some serious stuff to talk about here. This week on the Power Cosmic, usually we talk about a particular movie or a comic book or a TV show or something like that. And I just wanted to bring this one up because he's a person that you and I have had encounters with. I'm a huge fan of his, and I was really upset yesterday when I heard the news when I woke up in the morning that our good friend, Kevin Patrick Smith, from Red Bank, New Jersey, the man behind Clerks and the Comic Book Man and so many other things, had suffered a massive heart attack. I was like, I thought it was a joke at first, and I was I was very upset by the whole news and such. I mean, I've loved this guy since I first saw Clerks. It was given to me as a present from my friend Joe Murley on VHS back in the early 90s. And he said, "Hey, this guy reminds me of you." I said, "Why is that?" Because at the time, I was writing and drawing, trying to get my own comic book done. I was doing public access TV. We were writing and drawing, writing and acting in our own comedy skits every week, like Saturday Night Live. And my whole life is all about comic books and trying to do stuff and acting and all that craziness. And, you know, Catholic school boy, you always pick on me for that. You know how it is, getting beaten down by the nuns and their black hooded authority of oppression, keeping the talent down. And then you find out there's not just you. There's another guy just like you out there. And Kevin Smith was that guy, another Catholic boy, grown up, knows what it is to be oppressed by little tiny women wearing black habits with rulers, telling not to think about impure thoughts, that you're going to go to hell, all that craziness they tell you about. And there he was, comic book fan. He actually made that first movie. Did you know, Mr. Cimino, that Kevin Smith made Clerks on credit cards?
Yeah, he borrowed credit cards. Yeah, he maximized a bunch of credit cards. Yeah, that's what he took a big chance up there.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give this somebody, that takes balls, okay?
I mean, my foray into Kevin Smith, I was never that big of a fan, but I have to admit, the first movie I ever saw of him was Chasing Amy. That was the first one I saw, because I remember being with Keith and a bunch of our friends, they were like, you got to see this thing, you know, he talks about comic books and all this stuff, so when I saw it, I was actually really impressed with it, because you never saw a movie, none of that movies, those type of movies were around back then. Like, that was like a great underground movie that you actually saw in the theaters and stuff. But I'm going to give Kevin Smith this. There's one thing I thought Kevin Smith did very, very well. Like I said, I didn't grow up with Clerks or Mallrats, and then I saw those later, obviously seeing Stan Lee and the Mallrats
right,
was great.
Right.
But I got to give Kevin Smith credit, and it even led to when he wrote comic books. Kevin Smith always had a way with dialogue. I always thought he could write really, really good dialogue. So even reading the comic books and even in Chasing Amy, a lot of that, a lot of the way people interacted and they talked to each other, he's a genius at that. I'm not going to take that away from him.
No, he writes like people talk.
Yeah, it just, even at a young age, you know, I wasn't that privy to dialogue and screenplays and all that stuff. I just remember, like, listening to him, and yeah, it was exactly how we talked, and so I gotta give him props for that. It was really good.
Well, I remember, the reason why I love Clerks so much is not only because he had the balls to put it together, but I loved the whole monotony of it, because it's one of these things, I don't know about you, but I had dead-end jobs growing up, too. I mean, I worked in an art supply store. I worked at a discount store. I worked in a copy center. And you would just sit there, and one day after the next, and it would blur into the rest. Meanwhile, you'd be going to school. And it's so fun to be a young person, because you think the world's your oyster. You can go anywhere you want. There's going to be pros everywhere.
Yeah, you have that... what is it? Like that sense of freedom, like the whole world is your oyster.
Yeah, like they've been waiting for you. You know what I mean? Like the world has never gone past neutral. They're waiting for you to kick into gear.
And there's something, yeah, it's funny you said that, Mitchie, because it's something like, I remember graduating high school and being like, what do you do now? Like the world is like, that's a strange feeling. You
oh,
know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And you don't really, it's something you never really feel again, you know?
No, not at all. And I got two teenage boys, and one's 19 and the other one's going to be 18, and I see it happening now because they're leaving the cocoon of growing up all safe and sound in the neighborhood, you know, where you're in the little league or you go to church and you know all your friends and you're the captain of the football team or whatever it is. That doesn't mean a damn thing out in the real world, okay? I remember.
It's funny you say that because when I got out of high school, I moved to I went to Northampton. Yeah. I lived in Northampton, Mass. Because I took a semester at UMass Amherst. But the reason why I went there is because I had a friend. He graduated the year before me that he went there, and I remember going up there on a weekend, going up to UMass. And that was so surreal because, like you said, you leave your little cocoon, and I'm like, there's 30,000 people here that's all your age, and that you're, and you get to do whatever you want.
Yeah,
yeah. It was like, it was a, that was a crazy feeling. You were just like, wow, the city is filled. It's like Lord of the Flies. It's
yeah.
So God, kids your age.
Well, no, that, and that's why I like the movie Clerks, because you saw somebody who had the same feeling as you, because at the time, he's just a kid when he's putting this out, and he's got that sense of, like, fuck this shit, I'm going to do whatever I want, and I could take over the world, and you're, and I'm at the same age around, you know, he's 47, I'm 51, so I was, like, all behind it, like, yeah, why not, you know, because...
You know what's funny you say that? I remember an interview with Kevin Smith, too, and back in the day, when he was talking about, like, putting it all in the credit cards and doing that, he was saying, if you're going to take a chance, you got to do it at around that age, because if you're thorough, you've got at least a chance to, you know, eventually work and bring it all back.
Oh, yeah. That, I mean, that's what
it is.
You
do that at an older age.
Yeah, that's what it, I remember when I was going, I told my, I was always a good artist. I wanted to draw for Marvel Comics and such, so I told my dad, you know, and he was in the Marines, and he was a construction worker, and he went to night school to get a college degree, so he worked hard. So I would draw, and my dad would sit me down and say, listen, this is all nice and good that you could draw. No one's going to hold that against you. You got a good talent. But what are you going to do if you hurt your hand? You got to have something to fall back on. So he made me go to college. I hated it. I had to go to regular college. I was going to art school and a place called Pierre Art College, and my dad's like, I ain't paying for this, you know? So it was a great art. Frank McLaughlin was a teacher. He was an inker there at D.C., he tried to get me a job at DC Comics. Howard Porter, who's a big DC artist, he was there. So I ended up going down the street to Southern Connecticut State College. And it's not so bad. I mean, you know, I met my wife there. I met my friends there. Ron Garney was going to school there, Mr. Daredevil artist. Michael Jai White, Spawn himself, was going to school there. So, you know, it was what it was. And then you start reading comic books and you find friends and stuff. So like you said, you're in a campus with thousands of other people that are all full of piss and vinegar like yourself and want to do stuff. But like you said, you take your chance early on. And I remember that. So I'm in Koenig's Art Emporium and I wrote a movie, and I'm not kidding you. I got the script somewhere. It's in a notebook. I wrote a movie. It's called Mall Dogs. And I would sit, I'm not kidding, it's, I was 1988, I would write about the dregs that would come by the mall, and I'd sit in my little art supply store, and I'd look outside, and I'd watch the same people day after day, the old people power walking, the young kids that had nothing to do, the stoner kids looking to sell weed, the loser kids, the hip kids, the cool kids, everybody would come walking by that goddamn door, and it was insane. So I wrote a whole story about how afterwards there was a jewelry store that was robbed, and it was a whole heist picture, but it was like all behind the scenes of what happens at the mall. And I remember writing it, and the girl that worked with me, Elisa, she says, why the hell are you doing this stuff? You're not going anywhere. You're no different than the rest of us. You're going to be here like we all are. Why don't you just accept that? And my breath was taken away from that stuff. It was almost like somebody had kicked me in the balls, you know? She was like, who do you think you are that you think you're more talented than us? You're nothing special. You're nothing different. You're going nowhere. You're going to be here like the rest of us. You ever had somebody to tell you that? And that's why I always think when I see Clerks, I go, wow, I bet Kevin Smith had people tell him that all the time. Like, you're nothing better than this. You're not going anywhere. But he does it. And it becomes a huge underground hit. I think it was one of the most successful independent films of all time for years. And, you know, he tried it. Did you ever have that moment where you wanted to be a singer? You were in Grimlock. You were in a band that people told you, hey, John, why don't you go back home, get a normal job, sit down, raise a family, and call it a day? You're nothing special.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, especially when people don't understand, like, when we play music back in the day, too, it's like you travel, like, sometimes 300, 400, 500 miles, and then you play in front of, like, the other band you came with, or, like, five people. You know what I mean? Like, that was a reality of life then. It's like you know, sometimes you have good shows and you have bad shows, and it's just like you're always kind of questioning that. And then, you know, also had to sustain ourselves. Like what I would do is like, you know, I remember I pumped gas for 2 years. While I don't think anybody remembers that, because when we weren't touring and all that stuff, we still had to make money. And you know, we weren't making money when we toured either. I remember pumping gas at a mobile station for a show. I don't know, but yeah, it was like, and then you contemplate your life and your existence. But Mitch, just not like you, during high school, I mean, during grammar school and high school and all that stuff, middle school, I always wanted to be a comic artist. I was always pretty good at art myself. I was like you, crazy about comics, all this stuff. But then what happened was, in high school, I kind of got into girls, and I had my girlfriend and stuff, and I kind of let all that slip away. But I think a big part of that too was nobody really ever encouraged me either.
Right.
So I kind of like, if I had some more like, yeah, you should keep doing this, I didn't have a lot of that. And then like I said, when the girl came along, it kind of took away my time, and then I got kind of disillusioned.
Yeah.
But and I was disillusioned for years. But yeah, it's like there's those times. I mean, even when I was touring, I mean, it wasn't glamorous at all. So, I mean, like, you know, here I am pumping gas and all that stuff, and I was thinking, like, God, you know, is this what my life turned out to be? I mean, real life hits you quick.
Oh, yeah, no. Quick. And so what happens with real life, and it's not all bad. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong there's nothing wrong with, you know, staying around and getting a family and growing up and getting a job. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. So, I mean, everybody does it. The world's full of people that just do a regular 9-to-5 job. But the funny thing is I tell this to you too. Sometimes I live vicariously through other people. Like I sit back and you're kind of envious. Like you wish you could do that. You know, you wish you could be on stage. You wish you could be Bruce Springsteen. You wish you could be Neil Armstrong. But that's not going to happen because they already have a Bruce Springsteen or a Neil Armstrong. So while I'm over there working my 9-to-5 job and just, you know, putting money and getting married and doing all that stuff and dreaming about what could have been or what should have been, I'm watching Kevin Smith's movies and I'm watching his career go. So then he goes and does Mallrats. You saw Mallrats. Now you will look back at those movies and it's fun to see the people that are in it. You got Shannon Doherty. She was probably the biggest star back then from Beverly Hills. But you also have Ben Affleck, who's going to become one of the biggest stars on the planet. You got Jason Lee, who was in the great show, My Name is Earl. You've got Michael Rooker, who's going to grow up to be Yondu. And, of course, he's going to be Merle on The Walking Dead. You've got Kevin Smith, Jason Mewes, who are like the Abbott and Costello of weed. You know, they're funny as all hell. And not only that, you have an appearance by Stan the Man Lee, and they have the most profound conversation that you know every single comic book fan has always thought about when they thought of Ben Grimm is, what does Ben Grimm's dick look like?
And the funny thing about Stan Lee, do you know why they got Stan Lee?
Tell me.
Because he was cheap. Getting the right... For the Marvel, at that time, you know, Marvel was like, they weren't Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers always owned DC. So to get the rights to use those heroes to talk about them and getting all that was so much cheaper than it was at Warner Brothers.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, did you know that? Getting Stan Lee was cheap. That's the biggest reason why it all worked out. And Stan Lee was always, you know, always a ham for when it came to exposure. And all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They took Stan Lee and they went the Marvel direction in that because it was cheaper to get those rights.
You know what I love best? Kevin Smith says Stan Lee does his own bit of improv. At the end of his scene, when he's done talking to Jason Lee there, he goes, okay, enough said. And then Stan Lee does this gesture, like he looks over to the crowd as if someone's calling towards him, and he puts his hand up like, oh, wait, I'll be right there. And he exits out of the scene. He just kind of came up with that on the moment. He's, you know, doing his own acting there, his own improvisational stuff. It's just weird to watch that because I think Kevin Smith says they're behind the camera. They're looking like, what the hell's he doing? Oh, okay, let it go. Let it stay in the movie, you know?
Yeah, and look what that turned out to be. Like, I mean, how huge is Stan Lee's cameos in movies today, you know?
Yeah, and so Mallrats was fun. There was a whole thing about, there was a whole Batman...
That's when Ben Affleck was like the tough guy, right?
He was the tough guy in that movie. Yeah, he was the bad boy in that film too. Yeah. And And it's funny, though, because I was just thinking he does this Dark Knight routine where he has the little, what do you call that thing that Batman has with the rope?
The Batarang.
No, it's the Batarang, but it's also that the grappling gun or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where the famous lyrics come, "Fly, Fat Boy, Fly," because Kevin Smith comes swinging down like a Wile E. Coyote in a Warner Brothers cartoon, trying to grab some. I can't even remember what it is, but they're the blueprints to the mall or some nonsense or whatever. But it's a fun movie too. Chase and Amy, that's the one we talked about. 97. I saw this in a little art house place in Fairfield, Connecticut. And my wife and I went, and it was the first time I think we ever saw a real Comic-Con put up on stage or on the screen. And it was hysterical, man, because that's what it was really like back then. Before all the celebrities invaded comic conventions, there's that sequence in there where they're arguing about Lando Calrissian, and the guy pulls out a gun and shoots Jason Lee. And it was hysterical, man.
Yeah, and you never saw that before, ever.
No, and Ben Affleck.
Remember that guy had the Fuck Marvel shirt?
The thing they captured great about it was the anger and the testosterone that's in a comic book store, that's in all the comic book fans. Because you got to admit, like, wrestling fans and baseball fans and football fans, all these guys, they all get fucking fired up. You know, they're like, oh my God, yeah! But you don't see that coming from a bunch of nerds reading comic books. But it's just there. And if not so, it's more malicious and angry than any Yankee fan or Red Sox fan. Don't you think so?
No, yeah. And it's funny, too. It's like, when you see that, like it was, like I said, that none of that was ever seen before. And anybody that went to cons back then, because people have to realize how comics were not a thing. You know, it was something that you didn't want people to know that you did. I was lucky because I never cared and I was always kind of open about it, but it had that stigma to it. So you got the inside world of that, you know, it was great.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's a sweet little love story or kind of wannabe love story. Joey Lauren Adams is the love interest there, and Ben Affleck's in there once again, and it goes on and on. And then we're going to start seeing Kevin Smith do something he always wanted to do, and I don't know if you read a lot of these, but he starts getting into comic books. He starts talking with Marvel and Joe Quesada and all those guys, and they did a Clerks comic book, and then they did another one, but he does a great comic book. For all the Catholic fans out there that love Matt Murdock, you ever read Daredevil, the Guardian Devil story?
Is that the one when the Marvel Knights one that came back?
Yeah. 98.
Yeah.
That's,
you have to remember this. Comics were dead.
Oh, yeah. Daredevil? I mean, Daredevil sucked since Frank Miller left. He was the worst.
It was, but all the comics were in the thing I remember, I was working at a comic book store at that time, and then the Marvel Knights thing kind of revamped everything, kind of restarted stuff, and people started getting back. But I remember that was a big deal, Kevin Smith writing the Daredevil.
And the funny thing is, that's the one where the woman, she has a baby, and it's going to either be the new Messiah or it's going to be the freaking Antichrist, you know? So it was like, it's an 8-issue story. It was just something crazy. And Karen, that's when Karen Page is in the book, you know, and she's got AIDS. Remember that?
And she was
a porn star, you know?
Yeah, she got into porn, not a porn star, but she got
She wasn't like the star, you know, she wasn't like the freaking Elizabeth Taylor of porno, but she was, she had contracted HIV, during her career there. But, I mean, you got to think about that. That was unheard of. We're talking about characters created by freaking Stan Lee. Imagine if you ever thought of something like that, that Karen Page would become a porn actress. I mean, that's crazy. But Kevin Smith brought that into the comics, man. And that was a freaking mind-blowing back in the day, you know?
Yeah, he wrote a good story. It was, you know how Spider-Man and Daredevil would always meet on top of the Statue of Liberty? Yep. And it was a great issue where they're just talking to each other, and that's where you really saw, I thought, a lot of Kevin Smith's dialogue. I don't know what issue number that was, but I remember those being kind of cool, because, you know, really, like I said, Kevin Smith was always really good with that dialogue. I mean, you heard the banter of them talking back to back, and it was really cool. I love that.
I'll tell you, it's definitely word heavy. When you pick up a book and you flip through the pages before you read it, and you see all those word balloons, you go, "Oh my God, why didn't you just write a freaking novel?" That's what I used to think of when I used to get Chris Claremont books. You know, they were so
especially Kirby.
They were so text heavy. It's like, dude, you're not letting the artist do his job. You know, there's no visuals because it's all words. It's kind of like an Alan Moore script. It's just a freaking encyclopedia with some pictures in there.
Claremont got really wordy in the 90s.
Ugh. No, but the thing is, though, the Kevin Smith dialogue flies by you. So it's not like, oh, my God, I'm reading a textbook or the back of an aspirin bottle or something like that. But
Kevin Smith's bane was he was doing a lot of stuff and he was very slow and you couldn't count on him to put out a comic month.
That happens later on. But this one, though, I got to say that, like you said, there's that conversation you mentioned a couple seconds ago, Spider-Man and Daredevil. Are talking in the book, and Karen Page dies in the thing. It's really something. If you haven't read it in a long time, you should really go out and see it. But, you know, and Kevin Smith's doing a lot of other stuff, too. He's doing a lot of interviews at the time. I used to get these, like, remember DVDs? You'd get, like, Kevin Smith interviews Stan Lee, or Stan Lee interviews Kevin Smith, one of the things. Did you ever get any?
Oh, yeah. There's some of those DVD things, too, you know?
Yeah. So, like I said, the guy's doing everything, really. He's doing movies, he's doing comic books, he's meeting Stan Lee, he's hanging around and stuff like that.
And if you think about it, he became like an ambassador of comic books.
I always said it, he's every fanboy dream come true. He's like the Lou Gehrig of nerds, you know? He's the everyman that you wanted to be, and he's the guy. You know,
he
was living the life. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So I'm living vicariously through Kevin Smith, watching all his accomplishments, going, "Son of a bitch, look!"
And if you think about it, he's a big reason why comics went mainstream because he put it out to the mass media. You know, he was that Hollywood director that was like preaching the comic books and stuff. That was a big deal.
Yeah, no, and the fact is, the guy loves comic books so much that he goes back to the comic book store, and it's the Secret Stash. You and I have been there many times. We've been on the Ming and Mike podcast. We've both been on Comic Book Men, so we've gone down there. But in 97, right around that time, he buys that comic book shop for $30,000 using some of the money he got from Clerks, you know? That's kind of cool. They move it to Broad Street where it was, and he has Walt Flanagan, who's his buddy since they were like in high school, and he's in a lot of the movies. He's Walt Flanagan from Comic Book Men. He puts him in charge of the store, and then Brian Johnson, who's the character model for Randall, the other guy that ran the video store in Clerks. Right. He puts him in charge of the Los Angeles one. So for a while, he had coast-to-coast comic book shops and DVD stores and all that stuff.
Oh, I didn't know you had one in California.
Yeah. There was one out there, too. So, I mean, like I said, the guy owns a comic book store. You mean, this is like a fat kid in the, not him being fat, but like me being in the Hershey's Chocolate Factory, you know? I'm like a rat on crack. I'd explode. But it just keeps going. Now, the next movie we're going to talk about is Dogma. That's a Catholic nightmare. You saw Dogma with the poop monster?
Yeah, I did see it.
That's got George Carlin as a priest, which is hysterical because I used to love George Carlin. I used to go to concerts growing up in the 80s and the 70s. My first concert I ever went to was Steve Martin, 1978. Let's get small. I never was a big rock star guy. I would go to see comedians. And I remember seeing George Carlin in concert in New Haven. And that dude was hysterical, man. Do you ever remember George Carlin?
Yeah, he was, phenomenal. Talked so much logic, you know.
Intelligent beyond belief, man. He was, like, smart, you know what I mean? It wasn't just stupid jokes. Like, a lot of, Gallagher.
A lot of his stuff was common sense, but he's unbelievable.
Yeah, man, he just looked at it, like, totally out there. And again, so we're just rolling through the Kevin Smith highlights here. It's not that he's dead, but you want to go through the stuff sometimes when people are still with you. So having a massive heart attack is kind of a scare. So let's not turn this into a retrospect like the man 6 feet under, because he's not. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. again.
I never saw that one.
You should go out and see that one. That's when Jay and Silent Bob head out to California to stop them from making a movie about them, which is bizarre. Shannon Elizabeth's in that movie. Unbelievable. Shannon Elizabeth.
She's one of the most hottest things in the world.
Just for that fact alone. But the better one is Mark Hamill's in it. And not only is Mark Hamill in it, he's got a lightsaber, which was just like, you know, you never thought you'd see that again. And you never did again either, so technically.
Well, Mark Hamill was a big, you know, comic nut, too.
Yeah.
They had that bond together, so it doesn't surprise me he would do that.
Yeah, and being a ball buster like yourself, you'd appreciate it, because Mark Hamill plays somebody called the Cock Knocker. So there you go.
Yeah, of course.
Going to go by real quick, keeping on that same track. He's got Jersey Girl that comes out, which is a fun movie that has George Carlin in it, Ben Affleck. Once again, Ben Affleck is on the ropes. He had a big career, and then he loses it in advertising, and then you see him, he's trying to make a new career for himself, and Will Smith. Clerks 2 comes out in 2006, very funny movie. Brian O'Halloran, who has been a guest at my convention, he was at the one in Bridgeport that I produced. I see him all the time. He's a fixture of local cons around here. Then, of course, we're going to encounter Ming Chen. Ming Chen has an appearance in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. You know that. He's at a strip club. No, I'm sorry. He's in Dogma. He's at the strip club where Selma Hayek is on stage stripping, and Ming Chen is sitting in the audience. Did you know that?
No, I do remember her stripping, but I don't. He is, oh God.
Well, you got to, now Ming, according to legend, Ming Chen gets his job because he was running a website. And back in the early days when websites were like, you know, the electric light bulb, not everybody knew how to do it. And Ming was a Kevin Smith fanatic who created a website dedicated to all things Kevin Smith, the comic books, the movies, the whatever he was up to. So that's how Ming gets involved with Kevin Smith. Did you know that?
Yeah, and the other thing we found out about Ming hanging out with him and stuff, that he lived with Ben Affleck for a while.
Yeah, he lived in, like, the pool house. I think they just threw Ming down the street for a couple years.
Like, in the back?
I don't think Affleck even knew that Ming was on the property. He might have just been in the back. Might have thought he was one of the gardeners or one of, like, the groundskeeper people and just hang out a lot, you know? We don't know.
That's funny to know.
Oh, that's a little Ming history there, the Ming dynasty going on. Zach and Mary Makes a Porno. Didn't like the marketing of that movie. I could tell you that was going to be a problem. Things go a little rough for Mr. Smith back then. It's a fun movie. It's got Seth Rogen in it and the lovely Elizabeth Banks, who was, of course, Betty Brant in the Spider-Man movie. I always thought there was going to be something more with her. I had hoped there was going to be something more with her because she's got one of the prettiest smiles you'll ever see in Hollywood. Know who I'm talking about? Elizabeth Banks, the blonde girl?
Yeah.
I was hoping she was hysterical. Her and J.K. Simmons, when he was doing J. Jonah Jameson, there's that whole sequence in the third movie when he's trying to take his blood pressure pills and she keeps ringing the buzzer for him.
Yeah, they were good together. Great, J. Jonah Jameson.
He does Cop Out. Now, the movie Cop Out has Bruce Willis in it. And the better part of that movie is Kevin Smith does a whole stand-up routine about working with Bruce Willis. Because he idolized Bruce Willis. He loved Die Hard. He loved Moonlighting. And did you ever hear the thing, Never Meet Your Heroes?
Yeah, I know all about Bruce Willis.
Oh, my God. Apparently, Kevin Smith and Bruce Willis were not the best of buddies. I don't think they're sending each other Christmas cards based on some of the stories he told him. At one point, he says, I think there's this thing. Bruce Willis comes up to him, and Kevin Smith flinches. And Bruce Willis wonders out loud. He goes, did you think I was going to hit you? You know, the way he, like, jerked back like that? But and I think Kevin Smith did think he was going to hit him. But the thing is, Willis is from Jersey, you know?
Yeah.
So, see, I'm from Connecticut. You're from Massachusetts. We all have our thoughts about people from New Jersey. Sometimes they're lovable, but there's always a little, how can we put it nicely? A little
edge?
Yeah.
Like a little knife edge?
No, like a broken bottle with a jagged edge. No matter what. You could be a Cub Scout leader. You could be a nun. You could be like the nicest person in the world. But once you say you're from New Jersey, you automatically add that little barb, that little thing on a hook. You know, you put it in a fish's mouth and it snags the skin. You know? When I think of New Jersey, I think of Rob Bruce.
Oh, God.
He is incarnate of Jersey. He's the guy. It's like, nice guy, no matter what. If you were in a foxhole in World War II, he's the guy that would, like, pull the grenade out and kill the Nazis with you and all that. But at the same time, he might kill you for it.
You just want him in the foxhole, but in regular life, you don't want him around.
Yeah, because in regular life, he might kill you for a dollar. So.
You have to be with them in moments. Like, you know, I'm going to be with Rob Bruce. Okay, 10 minutes is good, and I'm out of here.
So the funny thing is about it, though, is that's when Comic Book Men, we're going to fast forward here, when Comic Book Men comes on TV, a lot of the people I know did not like it immediately because they all thought everybody was so mean to each other. They were like, oh, my God, that big guy Brian is so mean to that little guy Ming. And what's up with Zapsig? What's his problem? What is he? What's he on? And what's up with Walt? Why is he such a mean guy to people, you know? And I go, what are you talking about? That's how it is. I thought that was the most realistic portrayal of anybody I've ever met. I didn't see anything wrong with that because you know it because you hang out with Kenny Lawrence. He's from Jersey. That's just the way it is. I don't know how to describe it to people that aren't familiar with it. It's
like if they're not killing each other, they'll team up and kill whoever's trying to come in, and then they'll go back and try to kill each other. That's like,
yeah,
how the fans.
But the sick thing is about it. It's all like tough love.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's all love.
That's what people don't get. Like, I've heard people talk about, like, when you and I get together, or they'll go, "Wow, you guys hate each other." I go, "What are you talking about?" They go, "You guys are so mean to each other. He's calling you all kind of names. You're yelling at him back and forth." I go, "No, we don't mean it. For God's sakes, if we meant it, we probably wouldn't say it, you know?"
No, I know. But that's funny. I do the same thing with Keith. And I remember one time I was with a friend of ours, and she's like, "Why do you treat him so bad?" I'm like, "What are you talking about? I love this guy more than anybody." And it's just like, the more you love him, like, you give him the tougher love.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like just, you break balls. You know what I'm saying?
There's no other way.
I don't know what it is, too. I don't know if it's this pseudo-macho shit or whatever it comes from, but I never get offended by it. It's just the way I don't know. It's like,
how would you? How could you?
It's kind of like growing up. It's like your father hitting you in the head. Go, "What are you, stupid?" You know, if you did something, he's just pointing it out to you. If you did something stupid, like, come on, use your head. What are you, a chooch? What are you, a moron? What are you, a gavone? All these words, they're meant not to put you down, in my perspective, in such a way, but to more guide you. Like, you're better than that, you know?
No, right, but from an outside source looking in, you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, so I'm watching Comic Book Men. I don't think twice about it because I'm like, yeah, that's how we talk to each other. You know, it's all...
Go down to Southie in Boston. They're screaming, "Get the hell out of here!" And then, like, God forbid, and somebody be like, "Dude, your mother? Your mom's nuts. You talking about my mother?" Like, you know, it's like...
Oh, yeah.
They're so protective, too. Oh, yeah.
It's almost like Goodfellas with comic books. That's the way I look at it, too. That's a perfect example. New Jersey, the whole world of comics, New Jersey, that's epitomized by Comic Book Men, is kind of like the movie Goodfellas, except as far as I know, Walt and Mike Zapsik aren't killing anybody, at least as far as we know. Rob Bruce, definitely is burying people.
His body's in his warehouse.
Oh, my God. Kevin Smith has exposed the whole underground world of the gangster comic book shop. I'm pretty sure out in that back hall that Rob Bruce has got some people hanging on meat hooks like they did at the end.
next to his toys and his case.
Oh, yeah, right next to the, what's that toy you have, the Great Gonzo or some shit?
Oh, no, the Great Goblin?
Yeah.
The Great Goblin?
Yeah, he probably killed somebody to get one of those. A couple
you're like
times.
Looking through, and you're like looking through, and he's just like, "Yeah, just throw my guy on a meat hook." Yeah, don't mind.
Yeah, behind
that. Oh, okay. You just
take the He-Man. You know, instead of take the cannoli, take the He-Man. What are you doing? Pick it up. got an amazing Fantasies Five. And you got to think about the Funny Misadventures. Now, that show's funny because they go out sometimes and they go to a comic book convention, or they go to the woods looking for the Jersey Devil. That you've come on that show with your Mego Stretch Hulk. I came on dressed as Indiana Jones. I mean, the outside world might look at us like freaks, but to us, it's kind of like normal, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
You know what, though? I think, like, back in the day, I think that was the case. But I think today, like, it's a little more, it's more acceptable. It's more pop culture, you know? I mean, there's more weirdos out here now, out and about. So it's kind of like, it's gotten so weird that I'm even looking at it like, Jesus, I've been this all my whole life, and now it's weirder than ever. But that's how it was, you know? That's how they looked at us.
I'm just telling you, it's just, that show has exposed a world that people might not have known about, but for you and I, it's kind of like being on Krypton. You're like, yeah, everybody flies here or wherever.
Yeah, it's like, really? Yeah. Pick up building. Yeah,
absolutely. No, I mean, so that show's on, I think it's on its seventh season already. And Ming, see, here's the other thing. If it wasn't for Kevin Smith, you got to look at some of the things that have happened to you and I in our lives and the people that we know. So he is inadvertently affected all of us in ways he probably doesn't even realize, because if we never met Ming, and we only met Ming because he was on Comic Book Men, and the only reason why we met Rob Bruce is because of the show Comic Book Men, but you and I are in New York at a Mike Carbo show, and we don't want to talk anymore to Mike to Ming and Rob Bruce because they were annoying us, so you and I walked down the road to Broadway to a certain address with Kenny and Frank Kaz, and we knock on the door.
And
Reed Tucker from the New York Post, award-winning author of the book Slugfest, now available in the hardcover. Go out and buy your copy today. New York Times bestseller, mind you. Yep. We knocked on the door of Steve Ditko. And then Ditko opens it up, sees us, and slams the door in our face and screams at us. But I thought about that today as I'm out there walking the dog, because I'm like, wait a minute, we met Steve Ditko. We saw the Bigfoot of comic book history.
The ghost.
He's the ancient aliens of freaking comic books. No one sees Steve Ditko and lives to tell about it. But if we didn't deal with Rob Bruce and Ming that day and leave them, we never would have met them. So if we didn't even know Ming and Bruce, and the only reason why we knew him was because of Comic Book Man, which was because of Kevin Smith.
I remember asking Rob to come with us, and he said, he even said to me, Steve Ditko doesn't live down there. I'm like, no, I do correspondence with him. I know he does.
Yeah, I know.
I told you.
That's a studio. We have it on video, too. So whenever something happens to Ditko, we have video footage of Steve Ditko.
We got to make that grainy, like you know, like the Bigfoot walking through that forest.
Yeah.
You got to make it all grainy, because you see me, and like, I just, when that door opened, you can just see me. I'm like, we didn't expect to see anybody. And then the shock, and then how the camera kind of like, you turn it off. It's like you died or got shot or like.
Oh, yeah. I dropped the camera because I was so frightened. I thought that little man was going to.
We were all freaked out.
I thought he was going to bite me. But
wait, let's just throw this out there. When Ditko came, like, and he opened the door, it was like seething with energy. It was like a tiger, like trapped.
I know.
We were all like, holy Jesus. He was like, seriously, it was like a whirlwind, a tsunami.
No, but I'm just saying, it's been like one of these things over the years. Kevin Smith's been popping in and out of my life, whether he knows it or not. So, I mean, I'm watching Clerks. It makes me want to go out and do stuff with comics again. I start watching the Comic Book Men. I was actually down there because here's one of the other weird stories. There's a comic book store I used to go to every week for 16 years. I no longer proprietor that store. I don't go there. I don't patronize it. But I had an idea about setting up a camera in the comic book store behind the register like a reality show. And so what if we just left the cameras rolling here for a while and watch the people come in? And we even did a podcast for a while based on just some of the conversations, what would happen. That never panned out. Kevin Smith comes out with Comic Book Man. I'm sitting there going, once again, I'm living vicariously through Kevin Smith because he's doing something I always wanted to do. So I went down there. I was on the first auditions to be on that show, because at the time when they started Comic Book Men, they were looking for another person to be one of the clerks in the store. And I auditioned to be one of the clerks in the store.
Oh, did you? You didn't know that.
Yeah, no, I did. So there's an audition tape about me. And I remember walking in there, and Zapzig was there, and Walt was there. There was no Ming. There was another guy. I think his name was Quinn or Brian. He was the one that did the audition with me. And I told them my whole story about why I should be on the show. And I think it turns really dark and serious because I start telling how I got laid off and I was out of work and I started promoting comic book conventions and on and on. They probably didn't want to hire me because they thought I was suicidal. But but that was another thing, though, too. When I got laid off, I remember I was walking around, like, depressed out of my mind because I was like, how am I going to afford my house with my two kids? And podcasting was still coming around, and I would put Kevin Smith podcasts on, and I'd go walk my dog down by the beach.
Was he doing podcasts, that Fat Man?
No, this is before Fat Man on Batman. This is when it was Smodco or Smodcast, and he and his friend Scott Mosier would just talk, like kind of like what we do. Oh, my God, I would, like, be on the ground in tears laughing because they would tell stories about growing up. And then Walt Flanagan would come on now and then, and Walt would talk about fighting with some lady at a flea market for 50 cents because he wanted to buy a New Jersey Devils VHS tape, and she wanted it for a dollar. And he said, I'll give you 50 cents for it. And they just started fighting about 50 cents over a thing. But it's one of those stories that dealing with people at flea markets and comic book stores, you could totally relate to and understand what's happening. I mean, you live it every weekend, right?
No, of course. And, like, once again, it was like the first time you kind of really seeing that stuff. He was such a trendsetter in this industry. You can't knock him for that.
No, and the funny thing is the guy is – so, anyway, I auditioned, don't get the comic book man job. I remember my kid – I'm at New York Comic Con, the first year they did New York Comic Con, and Kevin Smith was there, and he was up on stage, and I got up there to ask him a question, and somewhere out there, maybe there's audio of it all, and just as I got up to the microphone, I'm waiting for Kevin Smith to, point to me so I can ask him my question, and my wife calls me on my cell phone at that very moment to tell me that my son, playing flag football, my son Spencer, had just caught his first touchdown. And I missed it because I was standing there talking to Kevin Smith. And then Kevin Smith's like, dude, you got a question? I'm like, wait a second, I'm talking to my wife. You just wait right there. And he just stands there. And everybody in the crowd starts booing me. I'm like, hey, fuck you people, okay? So then I ask him, I said, Kevin, in the bizarro world, where everything is upside down and backwards, what is the bizarro Kevin Smith doing right at this moment? And he says, I'm probably sitting in the audience like everybody else and just watching stuff and living in my parents' basement and reading comic books. He goes, that's pretty much all I'd be doing. And talk to him then. Then years later, after the audition, I go and start doing the press roundtables. Every year at New York Comic Con, I would sit in there with my microphone and record for my podcast, the IndieCast, Indiana Jones podcast, for 10 years now. And then I remember going into another Q&A with him. And I asked him this question. I'm going to ask it to you. I asked it to Kevin and Mike and Walt and everybody. Bruce Wayne finds out that his parents were murdered, okay? And he becomes Batman, right? You with me so far?
Okay.
What if he finds out that it wasn't what he thought it was? They weren't a doctor and his rich wife. Bruce Wayne's mother is a prostitute, a whore, a hooker. And his father is like the pimp daddy. He's like a crack guy. He's dealing drugs and he's just, her pimp slapping around. What if he finds out that was the truth and he was adopted by another family or whatever, and his whole life has been dedicated to fighting criminals and injustice and crime, and yet he is a product of the very people that he's beaten up every week. What do you think that does to him? Does that change his whole, like, he wasted his life doing the wrong thing? So I asked that to Kevin Smith. He goes, wait a minute, man, you just called Bruce Wayne's mother a whore? I'm like, yeah. So, but anyway, what would you think? How would that affect Batman and his mission if you found out that his parents were criminals?
You know what? I'm thinking about it, and if, okay, if he found that out later, right, and he's already Batman and he's doing his thing.
Yeah.
And, like, how would it would affect him? I don't think it would affect him that much because Batman is so strong-willed. It would be shocking to him, but, like, you know, Batman's whole thing is willpower and overcoming things, so I don't think it would really change him much. I mean, it would be kind of a shock.
Would it make him more compassionate? Like, maybe instead of beating these people up, I should take him to a clinic to get them help or something?
Yeah, but I really don't see it changing him because he was already on his way. Like, now are you saying, like, he just, like, how did he grow? See, I have to get a little more technical here. Was he growing up in a bad environment?
Yeah. And put him in a bad environment instead of the rich Wayne family. What does he do then if he grows up on the streets?
Yeah, you know what? He could become a gang member to, or maybe a higher up for the Joker.
Or would he? I mean, is it in his essence, his character, to become this, like, righteous person to fight for the good? You know? Yeah, I wish Kevin Smith would write that story. I wish somebody would get down and write that comic book. If Batman did not grow up in the rich world that he did and have Alfred and access to going to get studies and going around the world to learn martial arts, if he grew up on the streets without the aristocracy, what happens to him? Does he still become Batman? Does he have no gadgets? He doesn't have the Wayne.
I think a lot of it is in the mind. Like, he was already, like, you got to think of how people think. Like, I would still, like, you take comic books away from me, right? And you put me in another environment, and then maybe I get comic books later on in life. I still think I would have been attracted to them because there's something about, it's something about those heroes and the dreaming and the what ifs of life that they gave me. So would they be as ingrained in me? Think about it. If you got into comic books, like we were, they caught us as a kid when we were impressionable. But let's just say you got into comics during the 90s. Would you be as much into it as you were today?
No, they're very superficial. Comic books created a moral compass for me that made me live my life like the Bible did. So you have to get it at a certain age. And that forms who you are, you know?
I don't know. I think I would because there was nothing else that I related to really, and I would have been something I would have just found later on in life. Be like, holy shit, I relate to this.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would have. I don't know if it would have, like, you know, it's part of us. I don't know if it would have been as part of us as it is because it's so ingrained in our psyche. But to go back to the Batman thing, I think because he was his mind. I don't know. Yeah, I think he would still kind of turn out that I would still. I'm not saying that he would be all evil and all that stuff, but
right. I don't know.
What? That's who he is, though. You know.
That's who he is. Well, tying it back to Kevin Smith, I asked Kevin Smith that question, and you could actually hear that on one of the Comic Book Men podcast. They left that on the show because that freaked everybody out, and it was in that interview. I had lost a lot of weight back then, and I talked to Kevin Smith. So he's up on stage, and I said, hey, man, I don't know how it came up, but I said, hey, I just lost weight or something. And he goes, oh, you did? I said, yeah, I lost like 60 pounds. And he goes, how'd you do it? I said, you really want to know the secret? He goes, yeah. I go, stop eating. He goes, oh, thanks. And I said, no. And the best thing about it, and I had heard this, that the more weight you lose, and this is going to get technical, the larger your penis gets. Because the fat around it reduces so that it would naturally, if your body shrinks up, the other things are going to protrude more. So it appears your penis would be larger. So Kevin Smith goes, oh, look who's here, girls, tripod. So anyway, it was pretty funny. You had to be there, I guess. You don't believe me on that one, do you?
No. Well, yeah, I know there's fat like around there, like above, and it could, but like if you got a big penis, you got a big penis. Everybody knows. You don't got one. You don't got
no.
One.
But if you had lost weight and what the surrounding areas reduced, then there's nothing fighting for that space. So naturally, the penis is going to protrude more. So hence, it's going to give the appearance of being larger and longer.
Well, okay.
You never thought we'd talk about this on the Power Cosmic. That's what it is about this show. You just don't know. where it's going to take
you. Why don't you go into the event? Talk about what happened to Kevin Smith.
Let's go back. I know, I'm all over the place. But anyway, Kevin Smith, talked to him, Q&As, I've interviewed him. I was on the bus tour with him. I told him to duck before he got his head hit by a traffic light. We were on a double-decker bus tour in New York City, and he was doing a live broadcast with Ming and the guys. And I remember the traffic light. It's a lot different when you're standing on top of a bus and you realize how big those traffic lights are. And I kept telling him to duck so he didn't smash his head open. But then I had the great fortune of producing my own comic book convention, as you know, the Terrific Con. And we had it at Mohegan Sun. And I got to invite him to be a guest. And lo and behold, 2 years ago in Uncasville at the Mohegan Sun, Kevin Smith, Saturday night, he was there from 7 o'clock to 11 o'clock at night. And I had to get him off stage because after 11 o'clock, the union guys were going to charge me more money. He could have kept talking, but I didn't want to pay any more money because I'm cheap. So we got him off stage. He signed all the posters. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. It's funny as hell. He was tremendous. He was terrific. But here's what kind of guy this guy is. He flew in from California. How they got from JFK at 4 o'clock to the Mohegan Sun by 6:30, I'll never understand because the traffic's insane. He goes on stage. He signs 200 posters beforehand. He's there with Jason Mewes. He does the show. And then, you know, we talk to him and he leaves. The man's mother was in the ICU, intensive care unit, in New Jersey that night. I had no idea. He didn't say a word to us about it. He came on. He did his job. He made people laugh. He entertained everybody. And he got in a car and he went to go visit his sick mom in the hospital. Now, this is why this means a lot to me and anybody else that grows up blue-collar, Catholic, or whatever you want to call it. The guy did his job, okay? That's what it is. That's when I was a kid. That's the first thing my father, my grandfather, they always instilled with me. No matter what you do, you it's your job to make sure it gets done. You know what I'm saying? No matter what things get thrown out at you, people are sick, people are dying, people are, you know, it's raining out, your car's broke. At the end of the day, you're as good as your word, and you got to do it. So just like every superhero has that mantra that keeps them going, like truth, justice, in the American way, you can't stop. Like Batman can't stop and Superman can't stop. Kevin Smith, anybody else would have said, screw this, my mom's in the hospital, I can't perform. That dude got up on stage for 4 hours, talked, laughed, made everybody have a great time, hugged this veteran who came down who had a lot of problems from the Gulf War, who said the only reason why he didn't kill himself was because he watched Kevin Smith movies and they made him laugh. That dude was a fucking superhero that night. And I couldn't believe it the next day when I found out that his mom was in the hospital. I felt horrible. Like, if I had known that, I would have told him to take the night off. I would have said, oh, my God, go visit your mother, for God's sakes. What if something happened to her and you were standing here?
Well, shows you how much of a fan he is of this stuff, you know?
But I've got to give him credit, though, man, because that's something that people don't do that shit anymore. You know what I'm saying? People don't work hard anymore. They give up too easy. We live in a world now where you can't even say a nice thing to somebody without somebody getting offended. He's got old school ethics, morals. You know how we always joke about and laugh about how we're stupid. We grew up believing in comic books and we actually live that world that way. And people laugh at us. They go, "What's wrong with you people? You actually believe a handshake is worth something? You actually believe your word is your bond?" That's ridiculous. That's childish dreams, man. That's not how the world is. If the world did act like that and had that same type of values and ethics and morals, it would be a nicer place, I'll tell you that. But that Kevin Smith, when I saw him do that, I said, you know, this guy's good. He's aces in my book. You know, he could do no wrong, if you ask me. So.
Yeah, that was great. And didn't you guys go through some corridor and then what was your quote that you sent to him that
Well, to go over to the theater, we didn't want him to come through the main lobby and get attacked by fans and stuff. So we took him what they call back of house. So we go, me, Kevin Smith, and Greg from Mohegan Sun, we go to this freight elevator that takes us to the bowels of the Mohegan Sun where, like, the air conditioning units are and the steam. It looked like something from Gotham City, you know? And Kevin Smith laughs as we go down there. He goes, what am I going to get, whacked? And all I kept thinking was, you know, and we both started laughing because that scene of Joe Pesci when he goes to get made and they open the doors and he gets taken out, you know? He goes, oh, shit. And they shoot him in the face so his mother couldn't have an open casket. So the doors open in the basement and what is on the ground, but they have a chalk outline of a body. Like somebody made a joke because everyone must think that. And Kevin Smith just looked down at it, looked at me. I go, I don't know what's going on. He actually looked, I thought he was going to get killed for a second. So he got a little scared. But then, like I said, he came on, he did his show. We had a great time. People still talk about it. It was one of the better, terrific cons. Not that they're all not great, but that was a terrific, terrific one. And that's it. So long story short, we're back where we started. It's been a full hour right now. I didn't think we'd go this long. And the only reason why I wanted to do it is because, like I said, yesterday I felt horrible when I heard the news about what happened to him. And you stop for a moment and you realize how life is too short and you shouldn't wait all the time till something happens to somebody to tell them how much they affected you and how great they are and how much they mean to you. But just like Stan Lee, like you and I talk about Stan Lee almost on a daily basis, and a Roy Thomas, how we you talk to Roy almost, do you talk to Roy every day?
Yeah, twice a week without fail. Every Monday
and
Wednesday.
That's what I'm saying there. And that's a guy, and just like Stan Lee and Kevin Smith, these guys have been with us our whole life. Just like our family, just like our friends. They've been part of it inadvertently. I mean, we didn't know them and talk to them on a daily basis or pick up the phone or email, but they've been a constant in our world.
Yeah. And let me just say, yeah, we write every single day on email, but we talk on the phone every Monday and Wednesday without fail. Every morning he calls me.
But I'm just saying, did you ever get a moment to tell Roy how much the guy meant to you? Because why he's still here can hear it without getting maudlin, without getting saccharine filled and sappy.
No, I told him I love him. I said that. I love him. I even told his wife. Dan, when I was getting close to him, like, and she was asking why I'm so good to Roy, and I told him because I love the guy. I'm a fan, and not the fact that they're not just good people. That's a bonus on top.
No, that's what it is. Yeah, the reason why we love these people is because they are that. They are good people, and it shines through no matter what happens. You could tell that's a good person. You know?
Yeah. But the fact that he's an idol and he's a good person, too, because sometimes, like you said, you meet like a Lou Ferrigno and you're like, oh, my God, this guy shattered all my dreams, you know?
Yeah.
But let's be honest. Roy is a great, great person, and he's so – I don't know. Now, I know he loves Stan Lee, and in mass media, everybody loves Stan Lee, but in the inner circles of the industry, Stan might not be as respected as – he's not as beloved. A lot of guys behind, they don't say it, but behind closed doors, they don't really like Stan.
Yeah.
And this is true. But I don't know anybody. Now, I'm going to say this 100% honestly. I don't know anybody that's more respected than Roy by his peers than Roy. Now, there's a few rappers out there that don't like him or whatever. But on a board, all across the board, I don't know who's more respected.
Yeah.
Because. Everybody respects Roy.
Uh-huh.
And because he was a fan, too, but, like, he cared for people, and you can tell by his personality and stuff. You know Roy, they're just such good people. I don't see, maybe there could be some business arguments or whatever, this or that, but I don't know anybody that's not as beloved as Roy or respected as much as Roy is by his peers.
No, and we say all the time, we have the best jobs in the whole world because it's given us the opportunities to meet some of these people that we've admired and, you know, been fans of all along, and just to sit there and shake their hand and thank them.
And Mitch, this is why me and you get along, because we come from the same lines. We're both these obsessed, crazy, we love the comic books in that world so much. And yet, we're involved with these people. We love the creators, we love the colors, we love this, we love that. And, like, that's why we do what we do. Like, because when they're like, oh, my God. Like, when you sometimes walk around your convention and stuff, and you're like, I can't believe I'm trying to find a seat for Mob Wolf. Like, you know, whatever. But, like, I'm trying to get this for him or her. It's just like, you, these people are coming to you, you know? I
mean, Like,
that's the same thing. Like, when I'm at Wade, he called me. I'll tell you this. I'm gonna say this. Last year, we were arguing about me and Wade were in the back seat of his car. We're in Chicago, and we're arguing about who his favorite inker is over Kirby's and my favorite inker. I say Chick Stone. He says Joe Sinnott. And we're arguing back and forth, and all that. And I took a time out for a second. It's like, me and him are looking at each other, and I'm like, this is
Ray Thomas. I know. It's surreal. That's the only way I could put it. It's like a dream sometimes, and you don't think about it. And then at the same time, I'm sitting there, you know, Roy Thomas, we're sitting there having a soda after hours at the show when it's all over, eating a pizza with Roy Thomas, you know, talking about freaking comic books. It's just one of those out there. I'm talking to Kevin Smith. The last time I saw him was at New York Comic Con, not this year, the year before. He walks in. First thing I say to him is, how's your mom? Because there was a hurricane coming up that weekend, and she was down in Florida. He's like, oh, she's okay. You know, they said she should evacuate, but she's not going there, and she's doing well. And it's just weird. I'm like, you know, he was there to promote Comic Book Man or whatever project he was doing, and I'm over there asking how his mother is, like I'd ask you how your mother is if she was sick or something, you know?
That's why I think we do good business, like with these guys, is because we are fans and we just want the best for them because it makes us feel good that we're helping them.
And we get we get defensive too, and it's kind of funny. That's what I'm saying. Going back to that New Jersey analogy, we were talking about how that the tough guy aspect, but with the marshmallow filling, like, you know, they look like they'll kill you for a buck, but at the end of the day, they're pretty nice guys. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you could say whatever you want about anybody we like, Roy, this, that. But if you say it in front of us, we'll come at you like they're our family. Like, would you say? You didn't like Clerks 2? I'll take you out right now. Come on. You want to go? Let's go. You know?
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
It's a bizarre loyalty. It's a bizarre sense of loyalty we have. So,
I am so protective now to this day of Roy. Like, I ask myself, I literally could kill somebody if they tried to hurt him. I think about that. That's like somebody coming after my daughter. I'm so protective of Roy and Dan that, like, I think about that. I would bring that all out of me. Like, oh my God.
Well, anyway, this has been a long Power Cosmic. I got to just wrap it up. But,
Do you have anything to say to Kevin?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wrote to, as soon as I found out yesterday, I said, Jesus Christ, you can't die. You haven't seen the Infinity War yet. And that's seriously, because that's one of the things that fanboy like us worry about. Like, Jesus, I hope nothing happens to me. I got to see how the last Star Wars movie ends, or I got to see how the Avengers Infinity War is. I worried about that crap growing up, like Star Wars. Like, I hope I don't...
Are you kidding? That's funny. I say that, too. When I used to collect the Hulk comic, I'd always be like, God, if I die, I'm going to miss all those...
Oh, yeah. I know. I used to worry about that in Catholic school. Like, I can't die before Return of the Jedi. I don't know how it's going to end. And I was a fat kid, so I was like, geez, I hope I don't have a heart attack, because I don't know. I got to make it through. And now... I think about that. My good buddy Dan died last year, 46 years old, and I sit there. I used to talk to him about Star Wars and Star Trek and Avengers, and every time I go see a new movie, I get a little sad because I go, Dan's not here to see how it ends. Somewhere I hope he's watching. Somewhere maybe God gives you a little pass and you get to see how all the movies end when you go to heaven. You know? You get a sneak preview. But anyway. So, yes, to Kevin Smith, I wished him well. I hope he's getting better. Because what would Ming Chen do without him? Seriously?
It's over.
I was talking to Ming this morning about it. But no, I mean, you just hope the guy gets better, stays healthy. For God's sake, stop smoking. I know he stopped smoking tobacco. He started smoking the weed. Stop smoking the friggin' weed. Just breathe some. He should get you to train him like you're doing to me. No more sugar. No more sweets. No more this. Exercise. What else? The bike.
You know what, you like my pep talks, tweets in the morning.
Oh, I do. My wife laughs about it. She goes, oh, that's your trainer? I go, I don't see you telling me to get up and go exercise, but every morning it's like, Get up, you lazy fat piece of shit, and go do that bike.
I'm like Sergeant Slaughter. That's what I try to be.
No, and I do it, and I'm done by like 9 o'clock now. I used to not move till like 10 in the morning. Now I'm like freaking ready to rock and roll by 10, you know?
You showing those texts, that's great.
I got to be in shape because, you know, the world's coming at us, and we got to make Terrificon go to new heights, right? Maybe Kevin Smith will come back to Terrificon. Maybe he can come back this year. We can have an exercise program, him and I.
Get him on. That would be great.
People love him. And he was a great guy. And then Ming is there, and Mike. And Ming's like, are you bringing us all back? I go, for what? You don't do anything. You just take up space. What the Honestly, and that means Rob Bruce has got to come back, and I got to deal with him. And I start yelling at him. I actually went to bed this week. I DVR'd Comic Book Man. I think it was on at like 3 in the morning against Sunrise Semester and the Home Shopping Club. I go, who's watching this but methadone addicts? My Bruce. I loved when he started screaming at me that he was a movie star in front of the guy that was Iron Fist and the girl that was Colleen Wing. I go, no, see those two? They're movie stars. They're on TV. They're on Netflix. Millions of people watch them. Rob, you PBS gets more viewers than you, Rob.
Yeah, you're a little more. Your tone was. You sound very nice on your tone right now, but it was a lot more.
I was angry. I was funny. No, don't poke the bear during the Terrificon. Anyway, we got to wrap it up. Talking about Joe Pesci, we're going to finally reveal the secret behind our closer at the end of every episode. Scott Martin might now realize what we're saying. I talked about Joe Pesci. I talked about Goodfellas. I talked about when he gets whacked and they shoot him in the face. And how do they end that scene after Joe Pesci's bleeding out on the floor and now dead?
And that's that.
And that's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.